Andrew Boyd from Release International, thank you so much for joining us here on TWR UK. Why do you think persecution will rise in 2019?
You know, James, I really wish I thought otherwise. Wouldn't it be great to be able to report persecution over? No persecution in the new year. Well, we'd love that. But actually, the reason Release International believes persecution is set to rise is because that's what our partners on the ground are telling us. That's what the evidence of our own eyes shows us. We've been getting stories back from partners who we work with, who are dealing firsthand, immediately, in immediate contact with the persecuted church around the world. And the stories that they're bringing us back of what is happening in certain parts of the world show us that in certain areas, anyway, persecution is rising. In some cases, it's quite hard to keep up with it and keep up with what is going on. So the countries Release International is particularly concerned about for 2019, where we've been seeing signs for some time of persecution rising, are especially Nigeria, China, and India. There are others, but those ones in particular have spiked up and are flagging up to us. And our partners on the ground are telling us exactly the same thing. Watch out for this, because they're saying we're struggling to keep up with the cases that are coming through to us.
And those countries that you just mentioned there, can you briefly talk us through why they're areas of concern?
Yes, they're all very different, aren't they? And they're for quite different reasons too. If we start with Nigeria, in Nigeria for some time now, Christians, particularly in the north, and it isn't just Christians, this is mixed in with tribalism, it's complicated. Nigeria is a very complicated place. But we've seen that Christians within the north have been facing an increasing number of attacks by armed herdsmen. They are Fulani, that's their tribe. They are Muslims, that's their faith. And they're nomadic herdsmen who for years have lived in a useful, helpful relationship with the settlers, the often Christian settlers of different tribes within the north. Their cattle come into the farms once the crops have grown and they feed off the roots of the crops, which are no longer needed. The animals leave their droppings, those are used to fertilize the ground, everybody's happy. But in recent years, we've seen these Fulani being armed, very heavily armed, in some cases, lots of cases with Kalashnikovs, that's become normal, rocket-propelled grenades, sometimes dressed in military uniforms, often using tactics to attack which bear the hallmarks of terrorist training. I don't say that lightly. And they're attacking villages in the north, predominantly Christian villages, slaughtering people, driving them from their homes. There's been a big exodus towards the middle and the south of Nigeria. And the numbers, it's very hard to keep track of, but one figure that's come through to Release is that 6,000 people were killed in the first 6 months of last year alone, and something like 50,000 were driven from their homes. I've read lots of different figures on this. Because it's underreported, we really don't know, but we do know the scale of it because our partners, including the Archbishop of Jos in Nigeria, Plateau State, are dealing with the aftermath, the displaced people's camps, the orphans that they're having to take care of. So that's Nigeria. China, we see what looks like an emboldening of the Chinese authorities to begin to move against the large unregistered house churches. Our partners are telling us they're emboldened because the West is not protesting about this happening. So large churches, which have operated for years, have grown in number, are now being moved against, closed down, pastors arrested. And there's a process of what's known as Sinicization, which is making more Chinese. The churches are not considered to be Chinese enough. The crosses are being torn down. They're being replaced by portraits of the president and other Chinese symbols, and there is a move against the church in China. In India, completely different context. We're talking about right-wing Hinduism here, where the notion is that if you are Indian, then you need to be a follower of an Indian religion, preferably Hinduism. And anything else is a foreign import. It does not belong and it should be got rid of. So there are laws being passed in states around India to make it illegal to forcibly convert anybody, which in practice means it becomes illegal to suggest to somebody that they might want to become a Christian. That's what it means in practice. And this is violent persecution. And the number of incidents coming out of India are more than we can measure. That is definitely on the rise.
A number of interesting examples there and countries that we could potentially focus on. I'm going to pick China as a talking point because we know, don't we, that the British government has a pretty good relationship with the Chinese government. Given that, should the government here in the UK be more responsible for holding them to account, especially when it comes to this topic of persecution?
You know, this is the age-old one. What do you do with a rogue nation, especially one as big as China? What do you do with them? Do you put sanctions against them? Do you ignore them? Do you constructively engage with them? Do you work with them? Well, maybe you need to do a blend of it all. And yes, of course, the answer is we should be engaged. And actually, we can take real encouragement here because over the Christmas break, Jeremy Hunt, the Foreign Secretary, announced a review into the persecution of Christians around the world. Now, the figure he came up with is that something like 215 million Christians face violence and discrimination, something like 250 killed each month. The British government is aware of it, it's on the radar, and there's been an announcement that steps will be taken. Now, this is really encouraging. We can't ignore what is going on here. How we actually deal with it, whether you take sanctions or whether you constructively engage or whether you play really clever and do a mixture of the both, we have to engage with these issues. And the government has got the clout and the government needs to use that clout. So Release International is very, very encouraged by this and is hoping to take part in that review.
Andrew, Britain sends aid money to a couple of the countries that you mentioned, particularly India, Nigeria, and Pakistan. Would it be fair to say that money should be withheld until those countries make progress?
There's a growing move in that direction. If we take Pakistan, for example, which is such a well-known case now, that of Asia Bibi, a Christian mother of five, who was sentenced to death, spent years on death row in Pakistan for an alleged blasphemy because, as a Christian, she drank water, gave it to her colleagues. They said, "We can't touch that water. You're a Christian. You've made it unclean." And for that, she's been on death row. She should be released because the appeal court has acquitted her, but they can't let her go yet. My goodness. So there have been those who've been saying Britain should withdraw its aid to Pakistan. Oh, it's a difficult one, isn't it? We see similar noises coming out of the US, particularly at the moment, to withdraw aid. And Pakistan's been mentioned there too. I don't know what will work. Who knows what will work? Some kind of engagement has to work. And it really does fall to, I think, the rest of the world, where nations are struggling with the problem of extremism in their midst. Pakistan most certainly is, to do everything they can to encourage these governments to bring the situation under control and offer whatever help we can. Whether that is best done with a carrot or the stick is probably one best left to the diplomats.
Earlier in the interview, you mentioned the review that Jeremy Hunt has ordered, which will be led by the Bishop of Truro. And he's going to be looking at the plight of 215 million persecuted Christians. In an ideal world, Andrew, what are you hoping will come out of that review?
Well, wouldn't it be wonderful if the UK can start to do as the US has been doing and declare countries to be nations of special concern, which means that pressure can be put on those nations. The carrot could be, for example, the withdrawal of aid. I'm not advocating that, I'm just looking at possibilities. And at the same time, you could encourage countries. You can provide help with them in their policing, for example. You could provide help with them in their legislation. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the UK would put pressure on Pakistan to actually repeal those awful, repressive blasphemy laws which have led so many innocent people to be accused? And to be accused of blasphemy in Pakistan is to be found guilty and killed, if not by the courts, then by the vigilantes. Wouldn't it be good? And wouldn't it be poetic? Because the sad fact is, with Pakistan, it was Britain that actually introduced those blasphemy laws in the first place. My goodness, that's not a great legacy of colonialism, is it? So there'd be something poetic there if we could be part of the process of removing those laws. So I think pressure can be put on all kinds of levels. Help can be given at all kinds of levels. But the most pressing thing, I think, is when other nations say, look, this is unacceptable. This has to change. We're aware of what is going on. The world is watching what is happening, and it's watching to see what you will do about it. It's when we turn a blind eye, it's when we don't raise a protest, it's when we don't actually follow in the footsteps of Christ, Emmanuel, and stand with those who are facing pressure and persecution. He stood with us. He suffered and died with us. And if we just keep our distance, then these things can happen. And that's what we're hearing is happening in China, that the authorities are emboldened by the lack of response from the West, the lack of apparent concern in the West, that higher and higher profile home churches, unregistered churches, are being shut down and pastors arrested. We're not saying or doing anything about it. So we really hope, Release really hopes, that this review will propel this into the public spotlight so that more pressure can be put on and we can say, look, the world is watching. We will help you, we will encourage you, and we will rebuke you if we need to, but this has to change.
As we come to the end of this interview, Andrew, I want to turn our eyes closer to home. What would you say to any Christian who might be listening to this, who says, we have a comfortable existence here in the West as Christians? Why should I care about what Christians are going through in Nigeria, Pakistan, or China?
Well, James, you've put it pretty bluntly, and the small hairs on the back of my neck started to go up. I would smile, look them in the eye, and say, are you sure you're a Christian? Because a Christian is one who cares. A Christian is one who does exactly what Christ said, which is love one another as I have loved you. You can't turn a blind eye. The calling on my life as a Christian is Proverbs 31:8. Speak up for those who have no voice, for the poor and the needy. You can't look and not care and be a practicing Christian. Now that's a bit bald, isn't it? That's a bit blunt. But all of us, I think, need to be open to look at ourselves and say, what should I be doing? And for me, years back, I traveled with wonderful Baroness Cox, most extraordinary lady. Love her to bits. Wrote her biography as well, which was a great privilege. We went to Nagorno-Karabakh, which is a place on the map most people have never heard of. And we were with Armenians who've been persecuted. And I was praying, and I felt the Lord say to me in the middle of all of this, he drew my attention to that passage of scripture where he at Gethsemane said to his disciples, will you just watch and pray with me for 1 hour? And they couldn't. They fell asleep. Again and again, they couldn't do it. And the sense I had at that special moment in this obscure part of the world where Christians had suffered a great deal was that actually when we make that choice to watch and pray, we're obeying Christ, but we're actually reversing Gethsemane. We're turning around a great failure and we're turning it into something positive and constructive. Now, it's not Christ who's suffering today in heaven, but it's his body here on earth that's suffering. And the calling on us, I believe, is to watch, care, empathize, which means stand in their shoes, and pray and engage. To not do that is to listen to Christ telling us at the Last Supper to love one another and say, yeah, I'll get around to it one day. It's not good enough.